Welcome to Creepy and Geeky, the double feature podcast of horror and more. I'm your host, Robert, and today we are talking about two Adam Wingard movies, Your Next and The Guest. Joining me for this is Kelly Gredner. Kelly is a vet tech by day and lover of movies by night. She enjoys horror, cult, and extreme cinema, and co-hosts I Spit on Your Podcast, where she and longtime friend Jessica discuss horror, cult, and subversive cinema. And Our Bloody Obsession, where she and the queen of extreme, Zoe, dissect the most disturbing movies ever made. Welcome to the show, Kelly.
Thank you for having me, especially on this incredible double feature. Sorry.
Yeah, no, I haven't really talked about these movies very much, even online. I'm excited to talk about them today.
Excellent. Me too.
But first up, since you're new to the podcast, I want to get what was your first horror movie?
So I've been watching horror movies for probably about 100 years now. So I don't know what the very first one was, which is a really great question. But I can say that the very first experience watching The Exorcist as a tween was a very visceral experience and a very vivid memory of mine. So, I mean, I've watched a lot of horror movies, but that first time was quite memorable because it was a bunch of like 10-year-old girls huddled around at a sleepover, crying. No joke, watching The Exorcist for the first time, because that movie, I mean, I still think it stands up even in 2023 as being quite unsettling. So in the early 90s, it just about killed all of us. So that was, I would say that was the first very memorable horror movie watching experience of mine.
So did that make you a fan of horror movies from that point on, or...
I mean, I hosted and went to a lot of epic slumber parties in the early 90s. We would go to the video store and rent like 5, 6, 7 horror movies and pull all-nighters. Remember those? Who can do that now? I mean, it's hard. We need a nap now, some coffee, right. You know. So early 90s, I was watching a lot of like 70s and 80s horror movies at these sleepovers. So I just remember that one being quite a vivid memory of mine that's lodged in my brain. So I was always a big fan, but I just remember that movie being super scary. And then once I got a little bit older, like 1996, 1997 was definitely a pinnacle moment in time in my horror fandom because I was older. And so three things happened at this point in time. Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the TV show, came out, which I became a massive fan of, still am. Scream came out in theaters, The Craft came out in theaters. And so what's important is that I was now old enough and there were all these really great horror movies coming out in theater. So now I was going to theater to see horror movies. Whereas I was a bit too young and I wasn't able to go see it early 90s. So now things are changing. I'm going to the theater. Like I saw the Scream 1 and 2 and 3 in theater, The Craft, The Blair Witch Project in 1999. So that was like a big bunch of years for me because I was I was a horror fan and I was able to see all these movies in the theater. So that was a really exciting time for me. So I think that's really where things switched for me. And I've been like, yeah, I'm a horror fan. I'm going to the theater and seeing these scary movies like in person in real time.
Yeah. And that was a really good time as well to get to be a horror fan. Like you said, all those movies coming out at once and, you know, within that span, it was just, you know, a new renaissance of horror.
It was exactly. And I was there for it. You know, there was that little between like, again, 1990 to 1996, it was a little quiet, like Candyman came out. But I, for whatever reason, I didn't see that in the theater. That is also a very vivid movie watching memory of mine being that came out in 1994, I believe. And so, again, I'm, you know, a teenager and that scared the crap out of me and my friend. And so it that was a great movie. I think I saw Silence of the Lambs in theaters, but maybe not. Might have been a video rental because, again, that's 92 and I was pretty young. So probably didn't see that in theater. But it was like, I mean, so it was kind of a quieter time. And then boom, down. It was great.
Yeah. All right. Well, great. Well, that leads us right into our topic of discussion today. We are, like I said before, talking about Adam Wingard's early movies, Your Next and The Guest. And we're going to start with Your Next. So when did you first see this and how did you see it?
Oh, my goodness. So before we even get into this, I'm so excited about these movies because I am a massive Simon Barrett fan, like massive. Okay. But I also love Adam Wingard. Like, this is a dream team. I enjoy like everything they do together. Like, I watched their first movie together was A Horrible Way to Die in 2010, which is fantastic. Less horror, more like thriller, but dark, kind of gritty, emotional. It's really great. And then, of course, you know, Your Next is 2011. And then they worked on the VHS anthology series together. But like, when they come together, wonderful things happen, especially these two movies. These are probably my two favorites that they've done together. And so big fan, Simon Barrett, Adam Wingard here. So this was like an excellent double feature, excellent pairing. So that's what I'll say first off. So when I saw you posting about these two movies, I was like, yes, me. Also, talking about The Guest is what I do pretty much on a day-to-day basis with anybody that will listen. So, so You're Next. You know, I might have seen this in theaters. Again, it's COVID pandemic time has lapsed my memory, but I either saw this in theaters or I might be mistaking that with The Strangers. It's fine. But I was intrigued by it. So I'm sorry. It's either theaters or rental at home kind of watching it, but right. I liked it a lot. Home invasion films, I do enjoy. And this one I think is quite special and unique. And again, I think it's the dream team aspect of it, but predominantly Simon Barrett. I just really like the movies and characters that he writes because he's got a style. Once you watch enough of his movies, you see it.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know if I've seen enough of his movies. I mean, I've seen pretty much, you know, most of the stuff that they've done together.
Yeah.
You know, their later work, cause they've been working on, Godzilla versus Kong and the new one that's about to come out as well. So
yeah, I'm so proud of him. Not that I haven't watched them yet. So I can't say so much for Adam Wingard, but I haven't watched them yet. I'd like to, because I again don't know him, but proud of him for getting the opportunities to direct such big movies.
Yeah. No, Godzilla versus Kong is really good. It's definitely it's tied for my favorite of the American Godzillas. Ooh, so it's
nice. Yeah. Cool. Yeah,
so it's, I'm excited to see the new one. But we'll see how that goes.
Yeah.
But yeah. going back to Your Next. I only saw this for the first time a few years ago. I believe this rewatch that I just did was only my second or third time watching it. So I got introduced to it through Cavity Colors, because they were doing a t-shirt and stuff on the nice. Movie. And so I was like, okay, let me check it out. And plus it was right around that same time they were doing that I was hearing a lot of people talking about it. And this would have been 2018-ish or so. Mm-hmm. So it would have been, you know, a few years after it had come out, but people were talking about it and you know, in glowing terms. And I'll tell you, the first time I watched it, I was just kind of soft on it. I liked it, but I didn't love it at the time. Mm-hmm. You know, on the subsequent watches, I've come to enjoy it even more each time. I enjoy the kind of like black comedy of it. So it's because see my like, you know, as my listeners will know that I love horror comedies. But this one isn't like, you know, in your face funny. It's more like I said, a dark comedy in a lot of ways where it's just the comedy is definitely intentionally there. But it's not as in your face. So. But I do like it.
Yeah, I would. Yeah, the comedy is there. And honest, and again, if you've seen enough Simon Barrett movies, he's cheeky. He's a cheeky motherfucker. He likes to throw that in. He likes to throw a bit of that humor in. Right. And so, no, I agree. I agree. It is kind of cheeky. There's cheeky moments. You wouldn't, you know, expect it through all the brutality. This movie is brutal. And sometimes I forget about that. A lot of the kills are pretty intense. And again, when I rewatched it the other day for this show, I was wonderfully reminded of how bloody and brutal everything is. Surprisingly so. Like, I think it's sometimes easy to forget that this home invasion movie is pretty visceral and pretty dark. And it's really great. I mean, I have a good time with it.
Yeah. No, it's a, like, you know, it's funny just how brutal it is. And I think that's why that I have seen people mention it in terms of that, and that's a good thing, which it is. And see, I'm not a fan of home invasion horror, but I don't seek it out more so because I guess, you know, that it's more realistic in real life situations. You know, it's something that could happen to people. And so it's one of those things where it's just like, I mean, I'll watch it when I come to it. And if there's something good about it, and like I hear good things about a movie. And so, but this one was definitely one of those ones. And I think that ultimately what really makes this movie is Sharni Vinson's character and, you know, just being this really badass final girl, which is, you know, we've got plenty of final girls out there in the world of horror movies, but you don't get somebody who's so prepared and so ready for this kind of situation that she basically, you know, is so on the offensive that these killers have no clue what's going on. So,
yes. Thank you for bringing her up. Erin is definitely the reason why this movie stands out amongst other home invasion movies. Cause I mean, I get it. I don't often super seek them out either because the setup is fairly formulaic.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like every subgenre. So I get it. So it can either go the way of, oh, we're invading this home and whoops, oh, we underestimated this person who we're invading their home of, and now they're killing us, or, you know, vice versa, they're killing the people that they're invading. So it's not, you kind of have to get some, I don't want to say gimmicks, but like something a little different to pique someone's interest about it. And I think she is what makes it so interesting. And I wrote about her and some more current final girls in a piece I wrote for Horror Homeroom on contemporary slashers. And she is quite incredible. And again, Simon Barrett, if you watch enough, he does like interesting layered kick-ass women. I'll do a little shout out to his movie that he wrote and directed, which is Seance, that came out a couple of years ago. Recommend it. I will say that I feel like the first two thirds are a little bit quiet, which was hard for me to watch because I don't like, his stuff is not very quiet, let's say, but it's a little bit more standard fare, like, oh, this is a haunted girls' school. But then the last third is where I'm like, oh, yeah, this is a Simon Barrett movie. And this is what makes everything worthwhile. So I'm not going to give away the ending, but definitely watch it. But when you see it, you're like, yes, this is what I'm here for when I watch a Simon Barrett movie. And so here we have as Erin. She is super unique in that, you're right, she's immediately on the offensive. So many of our final girls over the years, God bless them, are not always the most interesting. They usually just like fight for the night. It's like this reactive, but she's proactive, but that's how she's been raised. Yeah. And I love the subversiveness of this movie because even her boyfriend at the time, and then at the end of the movie, he's like, if you would have just acted normal, oh, normal? You mean like a submissive, scared woman who isn't going to fight for her life? If you would have just acted normally, Erin, this would have been fine. but no. But she just like everybody underestimated her. And I love that about it because she just kicks it into high gear. You know, she's making booby traps. She's tending to wounds. She's not afraid. She's like, okay, just she's as the family is falling apart and getting into their still family quibbles and drama that they're all caught up still in. She's like, no, okay, you know, go lock all the doors, you know, block the windows. Like she's already into survival mode and everybody's just falling apart. And like, you need that person. And I love that it was her.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think that that's, you know, and I think that's interesting though, too, that you do see her let the fear in. You know, it's one of those interesting things where instead of being like, you know, she becomes Sarah Connor and just like, you know, in Terminator 2, where she's just like, you know, badass and everything, you know, she's letting that fear in for a minute. She's mm-hmm. feeling it and then goes, okay, I need to, you know, put it past and let's get going. Yeah. And so that's what's great. And, you know, she's definitely one of those characters that you love to watch because of that, because she's human, she's real. Mm-hmm. And you can see totally somebody who would have lived in that kind of environment having those skills necessary to, you know, survive something like this.
Mm-hmm. She shows vulnerability. You're right. Exactly. Which makes her so relatable. Sarah Connor, God, I love her. But not the most relatable, you know.
And I think Sarah Connor does. I think Sarah Connor does show relatability and show emotions at times and everything. But it's, you know, but in this instance, you know, it's just, you know, you don't want somebody who's going to go, you know, badass, you know, like full bore badass. That like, I think you have to have that relatability, that emotional like vulnerability, to portray her, to portray a character like this in a realistic way.
I think
that's, you know, both a combination of the writing and Sharni Vincent's performance.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. This movie is a really great creation of like tension, really well-written characters, like every single person in it. This family dynamic is really fantastic. They also, Wingard and Barrett really like to reuse some actors. So there's some familiar faces when, again, once you see a few of the movies, so that's really great to see. And this was, I forgot until I rewatched it, but it was, you know, Barbara Crampton's, revival, her movie back into horror. And it was so sad to see her die, but you know, she was back and that was really great. So it just felt very fresh.
Yeah.
And in 2011, we needed fresh.
yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And Barbara Crampton being back into horror and then doing this and the other movie she did at the time, We Are All Still Here, kind of brought her back and like brought her back big time. She was like, she got both of these movies and she was just like, you know what? I really love doing horror. I'm coming back. And now she's back in such a huge way. She's like not only acting, but she's now producing movies and she's like a real champion for horror in general. And I love to see that. I've talked, recently, to people, I just finished up, my Halloween series and we were talking about Jamie Lee Curtis. And as much as Jamie Lee Curtis, she does a great job at playing, Laurie Strode. She's not a horror person. She outside of these outside of the Halloween movies now, she doesn't do horror. She doesn't watch horror. She doesn't live that world. And so it's great to see somebody like Barbara Crampton, Felissa Rose, you know, all these people who have been in these movies and still love them and still champion them and still work on them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that kind of like it gives that kind of credibility more so for that genre than somebody like Jamie Lee Curtis, who's great. Again, don't get me wrong. I love her.
Yeah.
But she just doesn't care about horror. And that's fine. But you know, you'd love it when you see somebody like Barbara Crampton doing that and just moving the genre forward. So
yeah, totally. And Neve Campbell is kind of like that too, right? She doesn't do horror.
No, she doesn't.
But she does scream, you know, and she's always championed Wes Craven's Creation and Scream and Sydney as a character. And I mean, that's the best we can hope for. Like, have respect, reverence for a genre that has loved you so much. Maybe you don't love the genre per se so much, but I like when people aren't ashamed to be in horror movies, or that they have been in horror movies. So many people started in horror movies, you know, actors, directors, any like filmmakers. It's okay. It's okay to say that, because horror is fun and fantastic, but I like when they champion it and like get full fledged into it. Felissa Rose is at the Shockstock, the convention I was at last weekend. And she's just like a Shockstock mainstay, like legend. Like, she's another one of those that she's done a bunch of horror roles for sure, but she does have that iconic one that she did in the 80s, you know, 100 years ago, but she still champions Sleepaway Camp to this day and horror fans. And again, I just really respect that.
Yeah, same. Yeah, anybody who, like, you know, and I get it. Like, if you did horror and horror, like, and I know some people do horror and that's not what they want to do with their career. They only do horror so they can get in and get a foot in and then move on to what they really want to do. I get that. You don't care about it, whatever. But like, I really, really appreciate the filmmakers and the actors and actresses who really love the genre, continue to be a part of it, even if they go off and do something like, you know, more mainstream and more high profile, but they keep coming back. That's the kind of love I have. Like, for that, like, that's, you know, the Bruce Campbells and, you know, those people who really champion that genre filmmaking in all ways. That's the reason why I have this podcast, is, you know, for that love of the genre and everything. So it's really great to see people like that really champion it. And, you know, and even with Adam Wingard, I mean, he's kept his foothold in that, you know, he might be doing the Godzilla movies now, but Godzilla is arguably, you know, has one foot in the horror genre.
So, absolutely.
But yeah, this movie's a lot of fun. There's a lot of crazy kills. Like you said, he uses a lot of similar actors throughout some of his movies. It's interesting that he used a lot of he came from this the mumblecore or mumblegore kind of group of filmmakers, and that so he uses a few of those same filmmakers in the movie, which is always interesting that you've got these directors who were coming up at that time who also were doing double duty as actors. So Ty West, who, you know, everybody knows nowadays for doing X and Pearl, he's in the movie as an actor. He's, you know, he has a very short role in this movie, but, you know, it's interesting to see him and others that have done other movies as well as directors and writers or whatever. Simon Barrett, he plays one of the killers in this. So again, short lived. But it's fun and interesting to see that aspect of it. And it's very scrappy, you know, DIY, you know, and sure, this is obviously a low budget movie and it doesn't need to be a high budget, but, you know, and again, horror is great for that. You don't have to do a lot of stuff, but it's fun to see this movie in those terms and see, like, just that low budget, but just that kind of camaraderie, that group of people coming together to help each other make that kind of movie, and really speaks to a lot of that that again, what makes horror kind of nice at times is, you know, people coming together to make something cool.
Yeah, the community aspect of it. I love that you called it like a DIY kind of project. And you're right, it is. And Ty West, I'd throw into this kind of like group of dudes, filmmakers that I think are just super, super fantastic. And they do have a lot to say. They make some really great movies. And, you know, Ty West was also in the VHS anthology series, just like a bunch of people that kind of like, not really started, but kind of started in that early 2010s and in VHS. And I love that. I love the camaraderie. I love that these two guys work together regularly, because again, it's quite magical they really just, they work very, very well together. I think they really understand each other. You watch interviews, like they just seem like the best of friends. They can just read each other so well. They know what they're, what they both want. And so like Adam Wingard directing something written by Simon Barrett, I just think they just really can read each other so well and knows what each other wants and needs. Because there's some really great like jump scares, but really like spooky moments. When again, they put Barbara Crampton to bed and yeah, she's laying there and she's crying and then it's very still. And then that hand kind of just comes out from underneath the bed. I was like, "Ooh, boy." Yeah. It's good. Like even somebody that's been watching horror movies for so many years, like stuff like that can still get me. It's still unexpected. Like you kind of knew that there was somebody in the house, but it wasn't super obvious yet.
Right.
And yeah, so there they are, because we all have that. Come on. We all have a fear of somebody being underneath the bed or something right, getting our feet, or like we can't, like even as adults, like that kind of childhood fear, it remains, that anxiety remains. So it just hits on a variety of certain kind of fears, I think, in this that I think hits very well. And that was just like a really incredible scene.
Oh yeah, no, there's the plenty of that going on in here. Like, you know, they find that closet where like somebody's been like hiding in there for like who knows how long. Yeah. And you know, it's a lot of that where you're just like, oh no, I don't want to find something like that in my house. Like that's creepy as all.
Yeah. Ooh, the Froggers. Yes.
Yeah. No. And then like, you know, and the opening, you know, let's go back to the beginning, that opening scene with Larry Fessenden.
Yeah.
And you know, it's, and again, talking about bringing in these, you know, you know, actors and directors and stuff. Larry Fessenden, legend in the, you know, low budget horror world. So it's, you know, he had seen him pop up in this, you know, it was great. It's very short, small role, but you know, great seeing him in this as well. And just fun to, and you know, to keep coming back to that also, you know, keep coming back to that house and just making it creepy every time. It's just, every bit of this is just fun.
So I was going to say, it gets into the action right away, which is also something I forget. I appreciate a decent like 90-ish minute runtime. I don't have a lot of time and energy and attention span for anything 2 hours and above. So I appreciate and respect that this has a really good runtime, but they also get into the conflict and action right away, like so quickly. I mean, we do have that like cold open type thing that happens, but we get set up and we know, okay, all the families together, boom, the big family dinner, that's when shit goes awry. And I'm ready for it. And then the rest of the movie is just tension. We had already created like the family tension and the drama. We're like, oh boy. But then we get into like the conflict tension. And then I think they did all of that very, very well. And it keeps you engaged, keeps you compelled and enthralled throughout the whole movie, because we're unraveling this mystery, which I like that too, little clues here and there.
Yeah.
So it just, again, it was just incredibly cleverly written, great acting, little cheeky humor, especially at the end. The ends of these movies.
Yeah.
And again, watch Seance. But yeah, the cheeky ending, I'm here for it. And I forget that, again, I'm like, yes, Aaron survives. Absolutely. I know this. We all know this. But then I forget there's a moment where I'm like, wait, does she? Because she gets shot, right? I'm like, oh, no. I forget that she gets shot. I'm like, wait, does she not survive? Is it one of those endings? It's not. But for a brief moment, they still get me. They get me.
No, and that's what's great about it, too, is that, you get that crazy, like, you know, like, when you see it for the first time,
you know,
you go into it and you're just like, oh, she survived all this only to get shot by this cop. You understand it too. You totally understand. Like if the cop walks into that, like, of course he sees just her stabbing somebody. Of course he's going to shoot her and take her down. But it's like, you get that moment. You're just like, oh man, come on. And then, you know, she moves and everything's okay. But then you get that little stinger bit. Like, that's just so great, you know.
Oh, we forgot about the booby trap. Whoops.
Yeah. Yeah, because you do forget about it. You're like, oh, okay, yeah, yep. Everything's been going on. Everything's been, oh, yep. No, you know. So
yeah. Yeah. And you're like, oh, then it ends. You're like, oh, cheeky.
Yeah. Which is great. It's a perfect ending like that. You know, everything gets kind of tied up in a neat little bow of sorts. You know, and it's funny too, because I've seen people mention, kind of in regards to the movie Ready or Not, more than anything else that I've seen recently, about like what happens to this character, like the main character, after everything's over. Mm-hmm. Because when it comes down to it now, you know, whatever cops come at this last minute, she's going to still be alive. This cop's dead. Everybody else is dead in there. Like, it's, all fingers are going to point to her. You know, so it's going to be bad. It's like, you don't want to think about this at the end of things. So
No, it's going to be fine. They're going to believe her. There's some evidence around. You're right. It is some absolute carnage, though. Like, there absolutely. Literally, she leaves no one alive. So it's incredible.
So what would you say was your favorite kill or your favorite scene? Do you have one?
Okay, the blender again. I think
the blender is most people's favorite.
Oh, well, I always forget about it, how brutal some of this is. I remember, like, it's action-packed and it's well-paced and Aaron Yay, but then the blender, and I was just like, well, it does think that it's closed, so it would actually run. Wow. But she's so resourceful, and I love that. It reminds me of Buffy. Like, you're just going to take whatever is around you to kill the people that are harming you. And I love that so much. And she, like, throws the oil. He's like, it's not even hot anymore. But then he slips. Cheeky.
Yeah.
The blender, though. Ooh, it's just, it's you can feel that one. You can feel it. The kind of funny, but then not funny, when the sister runs full speed into the piano wire.
Yeah.
Oh, that's clever. It's clever.
And I'm glad they didn't go for the what would have normally been a horror trope of her going full force into it and her whole head coming off. Yes. That definitely wouldn't happen in real life. So no. I love that they actually went for the realism in that and just had her cut her throat open. So I was just like, all right, that's cool.
Yeah, it's such a great epic lead up. And you're like, oh, no. Yeah. It's fantastic. It's so good. So good.
Definitely.
How about you? Do you have a favorite kill? That's not the blender, maybe?
I think probably the blender, yeah. Because the blender is the most creative kill. Like, everything else, I mean, I do like the booby trap scene where she puts the nails in the boards and she tricks him into thinking that it's only the one, and he comes down on the other one. That part's really good. And I actually kind of enjoy now knowing that it's Simon Barrett, but like her just bludgeoning the dude to death.
With the meat tenderizer. Yikes. Like, that is a heavy mallet. Like, that is that would cave in his skull. Absolutely.
Oh yeah. And she's just like, you know, she's getting out all that emotion and all that, like, you know, just that that anger and everything, and just goes to town. So
yeah, for sure. And I love, like, the brother and his girlfriend's faces. They're like, oh yeah. So they watch her bludgeon a man's skull to death, like, just bludgeon it in. They're like, whoa, our plan might not go as well planned.
Right.
We did not expect her. And this, love it.
Exactly. All right. If you don't have anything else to say, I think I'm good on this one. We can move on to the guest.
Absolutely. Let's do it.
So the guest is actually my favorite of these. And it's funny too, because I believe that this is only the second time I've watched it for this episode. So it's, but immediately the first time I watched that, I became a fan. Between the color palette, I'm a big synthwave music fan.
So, like
the use of synthwave through all of this, the kind of underlying, like, what is going on with this dude the whole time? You're just wondering what's going on. And it's just a fun movie that's like this weird hybrid of action movie, like 80s action movie, and like a horror movie. And so it's just like this perfect blend, because like for the most part, like you're getting like this actiony kind of movie going on through most of it, and then towards the end is where it gets into more like the slasher territory. It's just great. So when did you first see this?
Okay. So I don't remember the first time that I actually ended up seeing The Guest. It probably was around the time that it came out. Okay. All I know is that this is a perfect movie. I have no notes. Well, I have lots of notes, but you know, like no notes. I have seen this movie a lot. My obsession with this movie and love for this movie, 5 stars, 5 out of 5, has just grown. Like, this is one of my all-time favorite movies. I watch it at least once every few months. Like, it is watched often. I was supposed to talk about The Guest on a different podcast maybe last month, but it ended up falling through. And I was like, do I really need to watch The Guest again? Like, I know this movie inside and out. I've watched it so many times in like 6 years.
But you still watched it again, didn't you?
Of course. I was like, I don't actually need to watch this again, but I'm going to. So yesterday I just like popped it on. I was like, yes, yes, yes. Because I love this movie. And like, listen, the premise isn't all that revolutionary. It's actually kind of cliche. However, it's taken that kind of cliche basic premise, but turned it into like this pop culture phenomenon. Okay, Dan Stevens, prior to this movie, did mainly TV and Downton Abbey. Okay.
Yeah.
And now we love Dan Stevens. Micah Monroe, the same thing. The same year this came out, It Follows came out, and she's blown up.
Right.
Like prior to that, she had done a few movies, but holy moly. Like, and this movie is a Halloween movie as well, if folks don't remember, because sometimes it's easy to forget because of the abs of it all. It's a perfect movie. It just is this wonderful, perfect storm of action, sexual tension, the synth score, but also the soundtrack, the like kind of gothy new wave, industrial kind of songs that they chose throughout this movie. Is so perfect. It's so cool. Again, they made this like very cliche premise that like, who cares? Super soldier, secret projects, whatever. Look at this movie and like live this movie. it's a perfect movie. I love it. I love it so, so much. I'll stop there for now because you're allowed to talk too. But like, I've seen it 1,000 times.
It's funny.
Just incredible. Yeah.
No, it's, and the funny thing is that like I enjoy the movie a lot, and I don't disagree with anything you've said. that I think that it's one of those movies that I kind of forget sometimes that, you know, exists and is so good. And it's one of those ones that I kind of want to savor each time. And so like I said, it's only been twice that I've watched it. I'm the kind of person who will watch and rewatch movies over and over again, and watch them to death, and then will be like, okay, well, I still enjoy the movie, but it's not as good as it used to be for me.
Yeah.
And so I like to give a little bit of time between movies just so I can savor them again, especially movies I really enjoy. This one is just, like you said, it's just fun. Dan Stevens, like, this was like his first really big thing, and not even big. This was not huge for him, but it was his first like role kind of after Downton Abbey. He wanted to do something different. He wanted to get away from, you know, the heartthrob guy, and he did it with this. You know, he bulked up. He was like really thin. I guess apparently before they started filming. And actually, he has this scene. You mentioned it, the abs. so the shirtless scene. Yeah. So he has this shirtless scene where he's got to look all nice and buff and everything like that. But that was like literally the last scene they filmed because they wanted to make sure he was at his like, buffest. And so they filmed everything else in the movie up until that point. So his kind of his weight and his muscularness kind of like fluctuate until that point.
Right.
And so like, sometimes he's skinnier in scenes. Like even later in the movie than he is at that point.
Right.
And so it's kind of funny. I didn't really notice it. It was something I found out later on. but it was interesting. I kind of like the super soldier thing. I'm one of those ones that kind of wants more explanation for like what the project was and everything. And I get why they didn't leave it kind of ambiguous, but I just kind of want to know more. But because I'm an action fan, I like the MCU stuff and just action movies in general, so I like that aspect of it. That was fun. Michael Monroe, like you said, coming off around the same time as It Follows, which was huge for her. But again, like, it's so funny too, like we say huge, like they're huge in the horror world, outside of the horror world nobody knows these movies at all.
That's true.
Which is so weird. So it's so funny too, because like I'll get obsessed with stuff. I used to be really into Funko Pops. So I was collecting those for a few years, and I thought Funko Pops were huge out in the mainstream world. Like people collect them, but people are casual collectors. They'll collect here, but it's so funny, like getting out of that world. I never see them anymore. Like I very rarely will see anybody posting about them or even seeing them advertised anywhere, but they're still big. The company's still around and still making them. So it's so funny, but that's the same thing with horror movies. Like sure, there's horror movies that will hit the mainstream and be big. But a lot of these other ones that we think of that get talked a lot about, like, It Follows, you don't hear about them until you kind of immerse yourself in that world.
Yeah, it's true.
So it's interesting. Then it's the same thing with The Guest. The Guest was one of those movies that I didn't know about until I kind of got into this world. I'm glad I did, because it's such a fun, good movie. And it's like there's never a dull moment in this movie. It's just fun. And speaking of actors that are in this, Lance Reddick's in this, and I'm a huge fan of his, and it's so sad that he just died. He's got such a great role in this. And it's sad that they didn't kind of continue the story on, for him, but I'm like, in general, like they leave it on a cliffhanger note that they could have done a Guest too, and I think they wanted to do it, they just haven't done it, especially since Adam Wingard's gone on to do bigger things now. This movie is so crazy good.
It holds no punches, right? Every scene has something excellent in it that you need to be watching for. The characters are so good, like that whole family, and the messed up thing is, and it's because David goes there for very good, wholesome reasons, and he does help the family out in very demented ways, very backwards ways, but he helps that family out. But I love the dynamic between David and the son, Luke. Also, Luke gives very good face. Like his reactions, the thing that David said, like there's the writing in this, I think, is just so incredibly, it's excellent. It's incredible. All the characters, the dialogue, the cheekiness. That dynamic between David and Luke is so good. And I enjoy it so much. There's so much humor in this, like, and it's easy to like forget that there is a lot of humor in it. There's so much detail put into everything that David says and how he acts and what he does. And, you know, when David says to Luke, he's like, ah, cash is easy to get. And Luke's like, what? Yeah. Like, who is this person? And like, what is happening? But like, he looks up to him so much as like this surrogate brother figure, which is really sad. And he thinks that they're friends. Like there's a, has cheeky and dark and action packed this movie is, there's a, so much heart in it that it's just like, it hits you on so many different levels. That wonderful bit of dialogue with Luke and David, where he's like, you know what? Don't get beat up at school. He's like, if they beat you up, go to their house and burn it down with everyone inside. What's the worst they can do? And he's like, what?
Yeah. It's just like, that's a huge red flag, dude. Run.
But it's like so normal for David to say that, but it's not a normal thing to say. Yeah. I love it. It's, I'm obviously one of those people that will watch things to absolute death. Yes. As I said, I watch this like every few months. I think it's also a portion of, besides being one of my favorite movies of all time, it's a comfort movie. Yeah, I get so much joy out of this movie. I put it on and it starts and I'm like, yes, we're here. I want to live in this world.
This could easily become a comfort movie for me. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. It just, it's so wonderful, but it has that heart. It has the action. It has the music. It just like hits you on so many different levels. And that's really hard to, I think, for a movie to do. And this one does it so well. Micah Monroe's like her, like small town goth outfits, like the attention paid to like costume design. Like what? I love it. She is just like an icon, a fashion icon in this movie. And maybe that is a lesser opinion. Like not a lot of people have that opinion, but like, I'm sorry. Like her outfits are incredible.
No, I agree. It's so funny. I agree. I think it's funny too, because like her and her best friend are like these waitresses at this, like, you know, like a small town diner,
but
they're still like, you know, they're still like, they've got their like knee high socks on. Both of them do that. Like, they're both wearing these, like, you know, these gothy, you know, kind of, you know, still keeping some personality to them.
Yes.
And they're obviously still, you know, good workers. And, you know, and so it's just one of those things where it's so bizarre. This movie's so weird and fun, and like you said about how David interacts with the family, like each member of the family he sits down with and interacts with them and becomes like a confidant to them all, you know. And you know, he like you said, he helps them in all these different ways that, you know, helps them come together, and you know,
until he has to kill them.
Until he has to kill them, because they find out who, like, you know, what he is or who he is or whatever.
Yeah.
And so he's just going to take them all out. And so it's just like, holy crap. That's some bad programming. So it's just, it's so fun. And you think that, you know, sure, the guy's off and you're like, oh, something's wrong with this guy. But, you know, he's being real good with the family until, like, you know, Michael Monroe's character, you know, figures out something's not right with this guy, and you know, starts this chain of events that leads to, you know, the end,
the death of this, like, her whole town.
Right. Like he's totally, it's so funny too, because like it becomes the Terminator at the end, and
this
guy just coming out, and it's kind of funny too, because it kind of mirrors that, you know, because Sarah Connor was this waitress and everything, so it's kind of funny to have that aspect of it, kind of this Terminator versus this waitress aspect. So it's just fun. It's like,
so
you said,
fun.
There's humor throughout this that's just, It's well timed. Every actor in this movie is doing such a great job. You know, between the writing and the acting, it's just everybody's spot on.
Yeah. I have to say, like, Dan Stevens, I try to watch anything Dan Stevens has ever been in. He is a busy man. You go to his IMDb, he has not stopped working. Like, he is busy. He unfortunately doesn't come to horror. He doesn't do genre a lot. Like, he did do The Rental and Apostle. I mean, I really like Apostle. I like it as a really...
I haven't seen it yet, but yeah, it's on my list.
Really fantastic, interesting folk horror. So he's still very handsome. And he's just a beautiful man. Like, we can't escape that. It's like amped up. I feel like they even added like maybe like color to his eyes in this, but his baby blues are very piercing. But he is a really fantastic actor. Like, he definitely has range, and you see it even in this movie. And like, I was really paying attention to, I mean, I pay attention to him a lot, but I was extra paying attention to him when I watched it the other day for this. But like, he goes from that really sweet, like, boy next door kind of, oh gosh, golly do. Oh, I'm just here to help you. Your brother really loved you too. Don't fuck with me. But like, in an instant, because he knows, once Anna, that's a feminine instinct here. She knows something's not right. That's what we do. We know when things are not safe. So she starts that, and you know, when she has already started the investigation, she's in her room and he comes in, he's like, I'm really sorry about Craig. And he's got that, oh gosh, golly, I'm so sorry. Then it's like, I'll be gone in a few days. Okay. And it's just like, he flips that switch. He's incredible, but he has so much personality as well. Like, again, you would think that this kind of robotic super soldier is not going to have personality, but he does. So when he goes into that bar looking for Anna, and he also sadly knows that the friend knows what's going on, but he just seems very annoyed. He's like, ugh, I'm exasperated and I'm annoyed and I have to go kill this whole town. Like, it's a lot of work. But that whole diner scene when he comes in, that's that really great song playing. He's like, ah, here are your grenades. Like, it's so, it's excellent. It's so excellent. He does such a fantastic job in this. And I think his performance is just not talked about enough, really. Like, he does such a fantastic job in this, abs and all.
I think it's interesting. Yeah, I think it's interesting that his star isn't bigger. Like, you know, he's had some minor hits. Like, you know, obviously he was very popular on Downton Abbey. He got rave reviews for Beauty and the Beast. And, you know, but like, he's just kind of, you know, does smaller stuff. Which I think is, you know, he likes kind of just being that actor rather than going for the, you know, the high profile stuff. He's just like, I'm going to go for the interesting stuff. He was on the three seasons that he did of Legion, which I still haven't seen, but I've heard really good things about. But it's, you know, so it's, he's one of those actors. And it's like with Michael Monroe too. Mm-hmm. She's, you know, she does genre. She's pretty much a genre actress. Yeah. But you know, her star, even in the genre world, is kind of low. So it's interesting to, you know, see these, you know, actors in this and having a great time. And I agree with you. He does such a good job at, you know, all the emotions and this switching back and forth between them all. Like, he's got this, even from the beginning, he's got this sly, like, smirk going on the whole time, where it's this, you're supposed to take this as a smile of, you know, just like, you know, niceness, but you can even tell that there's this something going on underneath.
Yeah.
It. It's not just, it's not quite that nice of a smile. Mm-hmm. And so, and you know, maybe that's just because I know what happens in the end, and maybe I'm just reading into it, but I feel like it's not just a nice smile the whole time.
Yeah.
So
no, I agree.
There's definitely something more devious going on the whole time.
Yeah. And then we get to the ending, which I love the ending. It looks great. Also, what small town high school has enough money to make your Halloween dance this epic?
They have one of the best haunted houses ever in the like that I've ever seen done in a movie. Like that is just every section, like, because they commit to doing like each section is just different.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, this is how it should be done everywhere. Like, I've not seen a haunted house this good ever. So like the production designers on this were so good. And how big is their freaking gym that they can do all that?
I know, right? It's kind of wild, but that's such a beautiful ending. Again, the music is perfect. He puts on the mix CD she made for him, and the fog and the colors and the beautiful homage to Halloween 3, Season of the Witch. Mm-hmm. Like, this is a Halloween movie. Again, we can't forget. This is set in fall. This is a Halloween movie. But it's such an incredible ending. I mean, you have Anna and Luke coming together to kill David, quote, kill. And then it's like the what the fuck ending. It's so, and it just ends again.
I love that ending. Ugh, it's cheeky. So good. It's so good. It's like, yeah, it's, you're just like, yeah, because you literally, you see him coming out and and you as the audience member, you're like, that dude, that's him. Like, how did he survive? And then that's what she does too. She finally sees him and she's like,
yeah,
what the fuck? And then it just fucking ends.
Yes. Yeah.
And it's just so, it's such a great ending. And you're just like, I want another one. Please give me another one.
Yes, so far, I know. No. Yeah. And I know the April Fool's joke of this year. What was that this year? Was it last year?
I think it was last year.
Oh my goodness, my life. But last
guest
year, we're like,
soundtrack.
We're like, wait a minute. I mean, that's a great soundtrack. I mean, they did
it's
great.
Such a great
I was like,
soundtrack.
I'll take that. That's fine too.
Yeah. Right. I was like, but just like, I don't even care. Like, give me a story at least. You don't even have to make a movie. Just give me the story. Like, just let me read the story about what this second movie would have been, you know? So
He's cheeky. He would figure something out. It's so it's just overall, again, I think perfect storm of really, really excellent writing, directing. And I think really this is my favorite movie that they've done together. My favorite Simon Barrett.
I'd say so movie. Far mine too.
Yeah. It's, I mean, it hits all the boxes for me. I mean, I probably live in this very small bubble because like anyone that I've shown this to becomes obsessed with it. Like on Twitter, there's been a lot of late night, like Twitter threads of us, just people, like we're just going off about the guests and throwing out so many gifts, especially the coming out of the shower gif. Like it's just turned into this wonderful community of like this cult classic that, again, I think maybe outside of horror, like people don't know about it. Like, I don't know. I'm so entrenched that I don't really know what happens outside of horror and stuff like that. But horror fans love this movie. We love the guest. I mean, I've seen a lot of like, maybe one or two people reference it. It's like very John Carpenter-esque, which I find really interesting, which I kind of get. It's like this stranger coming into this,
see it.
This small town, not who you think it is. And then there's this explosion of action and very cool score. You know, Halloween, Assault on Precinct 13, you know, maybe a little bit of Prince of Darkness. you know, I mean, I could see it. I could see it, but you know what? Horror fans love the guest, and I'm here for it because I think, again, it's a perfect movie. Like, again, no notes. I'm sitting there. I'm like, no notes. Like, there's like, it's just, again,
no,
it
I agree
checks off
fully.
Boxes for me.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree fully. I think it's one of those movies that I'm glad that I got the chance to see eventually. Mm-hmm. Like it popped up on my radar and I was just like, okay, yes, I'm definitely going to watch this now. It seems like right up my alley. And as soon as I saw it, I was like, yes, this is totally my thing. I bought I bought a hoodie from Cavity Colors when they put it out.
Oh, God.
Yeah, they put out a really cool one. So, actually, it's funny too, the artwork that was used for their, I think it was their second run of stuff that they did for the guest. It's actually by an artist named Aaron Leah. So the artwork that he did is now for Cavity Colors is now used for the Blu-ray and on digital platforms. So
cool.
Yeah. So it's really cool. Like I love seeing that artwork being used for that. So very, very cool. I actually want to get the Second Sight limited edition 4K version because that one comes with like a book and cards.
Ugh.
And everything, and it just looks so good. It's kind of pricey for me right now. So.
Yes, I know. I'm with you. I'm with that. I want everything. The guest. I have my basic Blu-ray, and I was like, I've seen this movie 1,000 times. Why haven't I watched it with commentary yet? I thought about it after I finished watching it. Yeah. I was like, wait a minute. I could have just watched. I should have just watched it with the commentary next time I watch it, which could be next week. Who knows?
Maybe tonight. No.
Maybe. Love it. Don't tire of it.
All right. Well, if we don't have anything else to say about either one of these two movies, why don't you go ahead and let people know where they can find you online?
I will. But first off, thank you so much for having me. Finally get to talk about The Guest. I'm surprised it's taken this long, but it's fantastic. And folks, watch Seance, Simon Barrett's movie. Really his directorial debut, really. So check that out. I think it's on Shudder. I think this might have been where I watched it. Okay. Anyways, love him. So plugs of my projects. Might as well just do that. So Spinsters of Horror, we are on all social media. So just find us through that. We do I Spit on Your Podcast, which is on all podcasting apps. Our latest episode that we released earlier this month is on The Woman, Lucky McKee, who is another fantastic, interesting filmmaker. So it's on The Woman, 2011's The Woman, deep dive into like feral feminism, misogyny, generational trauma. So it's a heavy one, but it's really fantastic. So that's our latest episode. And then Our Bloody Obsession, it's much more niche. But if you are curious about extreme cinema or in fact are a fan of it and enjoy it, then you can find Our Bloody Obsession on all social media and on podcasting apps. It took a little bit of a break based off of just Zoe's out in the UK. So sometimes scheduling is tricky with time zones. Right. Holy moly.
Oh, yeah.
But our last episode was bleak and dark, as a lot of them are. It was on Sunken Danish and Snuff 102. Oh, my goodness. So if you want to ruin your day, watch those movies and check out our podcast. So that's where I'm at. And again, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. Thank you for coming on. I appreciate it. It is, if you see something again in the future, that you're interested in, coming on for, definitely, I'd love to have you back.
Thank you. I will.
Thanks again to Kelly for joining me. Next week, the start of Werewolf Month begins with an episode on two classics from 1981, The Howling and An American Werewolf in London. And Donna from the Dawn of the Dead podcast returns to the show to kick off this series. Thanks for listening. If you like what you've heard, please consider giving the show 5 stars and a review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Also, please share the podcast on social media to help spread the word. Make sure to subscribe on your favorite podcast app or at creepyandgeeky.com. Music for the podcast composed by Jerry Smith. You can follow the podcast on social media at Creepy and Geeky on both Twitter and Instagram. If you'd like to follow me, I'm GeekThulu on Twitter and Geek.Thulu on Instagram. You can support the podcast by donating to the Ko-fi page. All of the links are in the show notes. Finally, don't forget, stay creepy.